It's Why Not Radio. They Might Be Giants can't keep Johnny down. Joey O backstage at the TLA in the TLA dressing room of They Might Be Giants. John Flansburgh and John Linnell sitting in front of me.
Joey O.
Hey, it's good to see you guys again. It's going to be difficult if you're way back there. Hey!
No, I'm not going.
Flans refuses to move closer. So thanks for coming back to Philly once again. Your new album is, of course, Join Us, came out a couple months ago. Very good record. I've been very impressed. And the thing I've realized about this record is I can't really put my finger on it, but there's something that sort of harkens back to the early records. It doesn't sound like them, like musically or sonically. There's just sort of an intangible vibe that reminds me of the first records.
Yeah, all I can say is that we've heard that, and we I don't think we can like shed any light on that because we're obviously we're very close to the project. We've had people say, it sounds like it's a return to form, for example. And there's, in certain cases, there's this implicit little note of like, better than the last thing you put out. I couldn't possibly speak to that. I think that we spent longer. The one thing I can say for sure about this project is we spent longer on it than we've spent on any grown up They Might Be Giants album in a while. So we had a large collection of songs to comb through to pick out the ones that complement one another for this record. And other than that, we're trying to just put our best foot forward every time out, I don't think we really had an idea of what this was going to be as distinct from the Else. I was personally a little scared that we were not going to top the Else, because I think, contrary to what some people believe, I think the Else is a fine recording.
I really like this new album. The more I listen to it, the more it's really grown on me. I've been really impressed by it. The last album was Here Comes Science, the children's record. And something, I haven't interviewed you guys since that came out, but something that really jumped out at me about that album, I think I was reading an interview with you the other day where this sort of alluded to. The opening song, Science is Real, came off to me as the most political statement you've ever made in a weird way, just because I think the album came out circa all the like anti-climate stuff.
Well, it's a little depressing that that has to be considered a political statement, because on one level, it's really not. It shouldn't be controversial, but... Flans can tell you what was going on in his mind. It's partly playing on this Lubin Brothers LP called Satan is Real. there was some consciousness, I think, that it was trying to reassert, something that everybody should already know.
Exactly. I mean, there's global warming. There's flooding in the streets of Philadelphia right now because of all the rains we've had, but don't tell that to certain politicians, not to get too political in this interview, but whatever.
Yes, don't tell that to certain politicians.
Maybe certain governors from Texas, for example.
Well,
governors we could name.
It's a funny thing. I mean, if you're just into fact-based stuff, it's weird when people feel like facts are not enough to guide them in their decision-making. But people are different, and we're different.
Yes. So sort of a difference between the last album and this album, the last one being a kid's record. It felt like another thing I've noticed about Join Us is that there's a lot of big like 25 cent, 50 cent words on this record that I had to go back and actually look up because I didn't know what they meant. And I didn't know if that was a reaction to writing songs for children. Not that the children's songs weren't complex, but lyrically, you're not going to have. Let's see. I made a list of words I had to look up. Cephalophore, duende, cloisonné, and I didn't know Kanajohari was a town in New York until somebody else told me.
I mean, I feel like we try not to get too twirly about this. We're not trying to be obscure. I think that there's some words that just appeal to us, and there's also ideas that appeal to us, like duende and cephalophore are words for ideas that are interesting, and maybe it would be easier if you could just say what they are and not use the fancy word for it. But we've had, on The Else, there were songs like the one...
I know which one you're thinking of, and we're both blanking on. Now I'm blanking on it, too.
Right, that one, right, the...
All three of us know, and none of us can think of the title.
Yes, we've had a brain injury.
Yeah. That's the song.
Yes, but, it's funny, like, with Cloisonné... I actually was pretty confident that everybody would know what cloisonné was. So I'm not. I feel like we might also just not be the best judges of what is common knowledge. I was introduced.
You made cloisonné in school, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did cloisonné in like junior high school art. So because you just put the stuff in the kiln or whatever, And it was just a thing that was available.
I never did
so,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a word that was kicking around from a from a long time ago. So I wasn't trying to be obscure. I was definitely trying to just reference something that seemed very often a corner. Is really, it's a very ununiversal. The whole gag in the lyric is that the guy is saying, like, you're choking on my dust in that sort of badass kind of way that people say. And like cloisonné involves this glass dust. So it was just basically making a very, very simple kind of common swagger statement into something very, very unknowable.
It's like a gluing glass dust onto to pottery or something, right?
Yeah, you basically melt it down and it looks like enamel. It's very beautiful. There's a lot of oriental cloisonnés. You'll see, I guarantee you, if you watch Antiques Roadshow, at some point in the episode, they'll be like, this is a piece of Chinese cloisonné from 2,000 years ago. It's worth $10,000.
Well, let's play that song right now. It's also musically one of the most interesting songs on the album. So this is Cloisonné from They Might Be Giants on Why Not Radio. It's Why Not Radio. That is They Might Be Giants, Cloisonné from the new album. Join us. My name is Joey. I'm backstage at the TLA right now with John and John of They Might Be Giants. Musically, like I said, one of the most interesting songs on the album. I also mentioned Slee Stacks, which you don't hear Land of the Lost references in songs every day.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call that a $10 word, but no. It is a reference. People love references. The song also makes the point, like, the person singing doesn't know what a Slee Stack is. So probably the larger part of the people listening to it are in agreement with the, they may not know what cloisonné is, but they have a friend in not knowing what Slee Stacks are.
But there was the Will Ferrell Land of the Lost movie a couple years ago, but it kind of bombed.
I never saw it. I didn't see that one.
I think negative people might have seen that one. So it's less famous now.
You also, we played Can't Keep Johnny Down earlier, but you made the video for that. You outsourced the video, I should say. It was a contest with fans. How was the response? John Hodgman picked the winner, right? You guys took your hands off and let Hodgman make the decision.
It was overwhelming, not just an overwhelming number of responses, but a really gratifying number of great entries, And Hodgman found six that were, I thought, I really emphatically agreed with his choices, but there were many more that were submitted that were also astonishingly good, and some of which were done clearly by people who they were learning how to do animation on their computer for the first time. It was a lot of, like, there were some brilliant 12-year-olds out there doing really interesting creative stuff, and then some of the stuff that we saw that Hodgman picked was also obviously more professional looking. But all of it, I think all the ideas were really appealing and exciting.
There was also a video for Cloisonné now, which was on RollingStone.com, which is a live performance, which is a very different angle as opposed to a guy getting naked in reverse on a video, which is the Can't Keep Johnny Down video. Another interesting song, we'll play this in a second off, join us, is When Will You Die? And I'm sure the song is not aimed at anybody in specifically.
Oh, that's where you're wrong, my friend. But I'm not going to say who it's about.
But I do want to play a song. It is one of my favorite songs on the record musically. I just love when you guys use horns. A couple John Henry songs came on my iPod the other day, and I just have always loved the way horns are used on that record and the way you guys have used horns over the years. So anytime there's like a big, super hooky horn song, it moves up in my estimation. Yeah.
Well, one of the nice things about living in New York City and working in New York City is that you can very easily tap the talents of these amazing horn players like Stan Harrison, who put together the horn chart on Cloisonné, really helped take that track to another level. And Dan Levine did the arrangement for When Will You Die. And those guys just come in. It's basically Dan Levine on trombone, Stan Harrison on sax. Stan actually plays on Let's Dance by David Bowie, which is kind of remarkable because I didn't even realize it was a real sax. It's got kind of like a distortion and a noise gate on it. And he actually explained to me how they got it. And I think he's even more aware that it doesn't sound like a real sax than anybody else, because if it had, it probably would have been a huge calling card for him. But all these guys are, they work with the heaviest people around. Stan and Kurt Ram, our trumpet player, were just playing with Radiohead the other day, and it's just we actually called them up to see if they could, do a couple of shows, and they were like, "Can't do it, man. Playing with Radiohead, but I'd love to," So you kind of get, you get eclipsed by some of these superstar acts that they're floating around with. But it's really great to be able to work with people who are playing at that level. They're really great.
I used to work with some of the guys from Conan's band, but he took them all to the West Coast. So
we're well aware of that. Yeah, we worked with Mark Pender was a big regular. Actually, I remember doing shows with Mark here. He would really blow the roof off the place.
Literally with the instrument. Blow the place. Well, let's play that song. This is When Will You Die from They Might Be Giants on Why Not Radio. It's Why Not Radio. That is When Will You Die from They Might Be Giants, the new album. Join us and Joey O here backstage at the TLA with John Flansburgh and John Linnell. Congratulations on your cover of Tub Thumping being voted the best cover in the AV Club Undercover website poll of all their cover songs they've been doing.
We just heard about that. I just heard about that yesterday. I don't know if you got the news. Did you see that? Evidently, we won by a pretty wide margin, which is very heartening. It's a strange cover to do. You know, it's not the kind of song that I think people, if you like it, you might even kind of keep it a secret. It's.
I think this is, in a way, the key to doing covers is you don't pick the one that's the beloved, particularly things that are beloved for the performance and for the, you know, the particular singing that's on it. And I think the thing about Tub Thumping is it's, in a way, it's enough of a kind of an idea for a song that's well executed, but that you could take in another direction. In other words, some of the tracks that we were invited to cover were so specific to the recording, it seemed to us that you couldn't really top them, and you could do a very disappointing sort of runner-up version, and that didn't appeal to us. But Tub Thumping, in a way, is just an interesting composition. You know, it's like it could be repertory.
It's also an insanely hooky song. It's like the hookiest song ever written. It just was weird. It just goes from a grabby bit to grabby. Even the intro is kind of grabby. Right. But I guess the intro might be a sports chant or something.
Yeah.
It's what they sing in like stadiums over in the UK. But we didn't know it was a competition when we entered it, to be perfectly honest.
I don't think it was. It became after the fact.
Oh, really?
I think so. I thought it was just like everyone picks their cover. And then like when it was all done, there was a thing on the AV Club website about like, okay, now vote on your favorite.
Yeah. It seems kind of unsporting in a way.
It suggests that this is a competition, you know. And I mean, really the spirit in which we entered it was connected to the fact that another one of the bands had covered one of our songs. So we were not trying to blow them off the stage. You know, I felt like it was this mutual handshake between bands, you know, that seemed friendly. And then it just got ugly.
And just the AV Club is just a great website. Like, I've become addicted. They're really good at just pop culture criticism and critique and analysis.
The particular movie critics who these guys who are probably like not too much younger than we are, but because they're associated with The Onion, I think of them as the young Turks of movie criticism, who actually do really, even when you don't agree with them, they do really interesting analyses of film. And that's actually what I like reading The Onion for, is for the movie reviews.
I think a lot of people really do admire the AV Club just as a way. They've got some really good writers. We did an interview with them, and the woman who was writing the article was clearly just a different level of journalist, like very, very pro. And I'm not sure if The Onion pays really well, or maybe there just aren't that many job opportunities for the talent pool of journalists. This might be bigger than the actual number of jobs, but they obviously have got some great people, really qualified people there. It's just a different kind of, I mean, getting back to the thing about it's being fun to work in New York and just work with all these great musicians. I feel like the AV Club definitely benefits from some.
Well, those are all Chicago guys, but they're growing them out there. You know?
They have a Philly-based. I think it's just like one person, one full-time employee here now too. But they've been staking out you can get now The Onion in like the honor boxes on the streets in Philly, and that just happened in the past year.
Right.
Something else you guys have done in recent time. I know Flansburgh, you've been, I think, the primary person behind this, is that you've been very good about social media and very smart about how you've used it. And it's like one part, like, hey, come to all our shows, here's all our shows. On the other hand, you'll like be like, hey, I'm going to answer some questions on Twitter, or hey, here's what we've been doing, playing poker backstage or something.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first tour we've had since the Twitter started. And I think it's been fortunate for me to be hanging out with Jonathan Colton and John Hodgman a little bit, just because the tone that they establish with it is kind of perfect, which is it's pretty low key. A lot of times it's basically just funny, and then there's of course the constant plugging. But I think I actually probably plug more than they would. I think they would be too shy to plug as relentlessly as me. But you know, I'm from another era, man. If I'm going to do it, I want people to know we're doing shows.
It depends on the artist. Like, some artists are really good. Amanda Palmer, I don't know how you're familiar with her work.
I've heard about, I follow Nico Case, and she posts a lot. And she's, it's very, very chatty. I mean, Twitter is a really odd thing because...
Isn't there some unwritten etiquette about that? What percentage of your posts are supposed to be advertising?
Well, that's a good question, because with stuff like us, if I don't post that we're on the radio, like the thing we did this morning, people will actively complain that we didn't mention it.
Right.
So if there's kind of
to up your percentage of non promotional posts, like, and I'm wearing sneakers, right now.
There are a lot of like made up double binds. I think there are a lot of people who are pro users at Twitter who have very specific ideas about how the space should be used. And I think they're wrong. I think you can do it any way you can do it any way you want. And if it doesn't feel right at any point, you should just not do it. It's because it's just so weird. It's just a weird way to communicate with people. It is nice to be able to. In many ways, it reminds me of just signing an autograph, which is, it feels like its power is in its limitation. That you don't get hung up having to, there's no place to rant, which is a tremendous relief. Like, I think the problem with the internet in general is that it is so rant-tastic. People having unlimited space to flip on the all caps lock and start, screaming back at the whatever social gaffe that the person made was. It's Twitter is kind of interesting. Facebook is actually more naturally drawn to Facebook because it's a lot more like broadcasting. It's like radio, and I spend a lot of time on Facebook just putting forward other things that I've a lot of old music that I like, and just weird things from other sites. So I'm kind of an aggregator of things unusual. And people seem to enjoy that tremendously, too. I've even put up cat videos that I thought were interesting.
Well, the internet is 40% cat videos and 40% ranting, so there you go.
I like cat videos. So, I don't know. It's not really expression, but it is a kind of communication.
It just depends on the artist and their relationship with the fans and the size of the artist. Tom York isn't, responding to people on Twitter every day, but... Yeah, it depends.
Yeah, I don't respond to people on Facebook. I treat Facebook as a total one-way street. And sometimes if there's stuff, if anything gets political, people will completely freak out. And that's a very strange thing to witness. And there's part of me that just wants to go like, leave me alone when that stuff happens. Because the only political stuff I would post is just stuff that seems... I remember actually I posted something about very early on with... Bachman, when she the first time she said the crazy thing about investigating people in Congress for being patriotic.
Oh yeah, Barack Obama was un-American.
Yeah, that little moment I posted, and it was very strange. It did make me realize that there are people in our audience that are pretty far to the right, and they really don't want to kind of conflate us with that. But it was just so strange. I felt like it was like seeing a UFO land. It wasn't like I was thinking, oh, I really need to drill down on some policy issues with our audience. I just thought, like, this is just downright weird. But that's not, obviously, some people don't think it's so weird.
I had a similar conversation with John McCrae of Cake earlier this year because they're very political and more socially active, and they'll post things about to go back to the environment that we were talking about earlier, and just stuff that's environmental. And he said they would have people get angry at them on the internet too. How dare you post something about the oil spills?
I think the point at which it becomes, it is a drag is when the musician or whoever it is who's kind of got everyone's attention for some other reason is saying some poorly informed or just sort of trite thing that advocates a particular set of talking points. It's really a waste of everybody's time. But as John said, like, occasionally there are these news stories that are just weird, and you want to say, that's really weird, you know. And that's, I mean, I suppose that's where it would be interesting to our audience, we would think.
You mentioned earlier Jonathan Colton, who's just finished sound checking down below us, and you produced his new record. I just got it in the mail, actually. It's pretty good. All I knew from him before was that zombie song he had, and I knew he had some, like, nerdy science songs, but I was like, oh, this is a good, like, indie pop record. Sarah Quinn's on. I love Tegan and Sarah, so I was impressed.
Oh, I produced the record, and the Sarah song, the Still Alive song, which is actually from a video game, I guess, is an amazing performance. She's a great singer. I really was impressed with her, just the way she did her thing. I didn't really know Tegan and Sarah before, so it was Pat Dillett, who engineered the record, had worked with her and recommended her because I was sort of describing the kind of approach that I wanted, and he thought she would be really perfect. It seems like they've got a legion of fans. Mm-hmm. They're extremely popular, considering I just haven't seen much notice about them. I'm surprised they're not bigger in a more kind of mainstream way. I mean, obviously they've got a big underground following, but they're terrific.
Their last album was outstanding. It was really just slick guitar pop and really just the catchiest record that year. And mainstream radio didn't play it, maybe because it's small girls with high pitched voices singing in front of these big hooks.
I got the one that was produced by Chris from
Chris Walla.
Yeah, that was a great effort. I thought he did a really good job with them.
And then in a couple weeks, I think this is the end of the tour. I think the next couple days, the end of this leg of touring, and then you're picking up touring again, and you're touring with a band that's friends with our station, Gold Motel, who are out of Chicago. They're really good, really nice people.
What are they like? They're with our same booking agent. That was the connection.
Again, girls singing with good like hooks, like very like Rickenbacker or guitar pop, but really just nice people, friendly, fun. Catchy band.
Just because you're familiar with the genre doesn't mean it's you don't want to hear more of it, I guess.
Exactly. Well, we're just about wrapping up. Actually, Flans had to run out for 1 second, but that's okay. Actually, my last question was for him. So, well, yes, the very last question specifically is for you, and then you can run out the door.
Say goodbye to John.
Yeah. Very last question.
No.
Yes, Linnell will answer the question for you. That's specifically about you.
Yeah,
The question is, and I apologize for using one of your own songs against you in this question, but you guys have had the same look your entire career. But Flans, I have to ask, why did you grow a beard?
Yes. Well, I can answer that.
We'll have Linnell answer the question. Okay.
You know, I was frankly skeptical at first, but he's. I tried to grow a beard, and it. I can tell you that it looked terrible. It was sort of the similar thing with Jon Stewart, like. There was a beard there, but it was sort of very patchy and mostly white. So that was no good. And Flansburgh has, I don't know whether he's putting a Sharpie on the hair or something, but he's successfully grown a very thick and dark beard, which has the intended effect of making him look, good in a new way.
5 years younger. My beard is patchy. My beard, I will be the first to admit, my beard could look better. I'm not saying it couldn't look better, but I have to tell you, I could look better in a whole lot of different ways. So I'm not going to get hung up on that. I'm just doing all I can. I barely even shaved before I was 30. So the idea of growing a beard was something that had never even crossed my mind. I know people who grow beards without even just because they forgot not to.
Yeah. Our drummer and
Marty Beller is like a chia pet, so it's just an experiment. My mother hates it. My wife really likes it. It looks a little on the kind of that weird Bruce Springsteen, kind of rabbi in training a little bit. It's I don't know, it's not the strongest looking beard, but it's all I'm working with what I got.
I thought you were going for a beatnik look when I first saw the initial press photos come out. I was like, whoa.
I guess it is kind of a beatnik look. It seems like the trend beard now is this very full kind of
Boys.
Yeah, the like things that make you like all the guys who really look like they could be lumberjack guys. Like the lumberjacky beard is really the kind of beard to have for right now. Yeah, I just can't do it.
There's a beatnik beard that is just the, in other words, you shave, just the little end bit. Maybe is that called a Van Dyke, where you have just the thing and the mustache, and then you do not engage with these sideburns, and that's kind of the classic 1950s one.
The bongos and everything.
Yeah. With the bongos. Comes with bongos.
Well, I think discussing beards is a perfect way to wrap up this interview. So, John, you have to run out the door.
So I've got a dash, but that's fine. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us, and thanks for coming back.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Thank you for coming back. I'll let Linnell pick the very last song. All right, pick one more song off the record, anything you want to play.
Oh, well, why don't we listen to You Probably Get That a Lot, just for sort of a different angle.
Sure. It's You Probably Get That a Lot. It's They Might Be Giants on Why Not Radio.
Hi, it's John Linnell from They Might Be Giants. You're listening to Why Not Radio.